Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, you can always reach us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us right now on the line Mr. John McCaslin, and he's written a book called The Beltway Beat. Now, he has certainly been he's had his own radio program. He's been a White Horse correspondent. But right now he writes a syndicated column that's read all across the country. And it deals with his experience within the Beltway. And he's written this fascinating new book talking about his experiences dealing with the politicians from both political parties and the machinations, the incredible things that go on in Washington, D.C. and our nation's capital. John, thank you so much for being with us. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks very much, Dan. It's great to be with you.
All right, fine. Well, you've been there for a long period of time. I'm sure you've seen politicians come and go. But did anything change? Are things getting better now when we have a new administration in the White House?
Well, you know, my Inside the Beltway book, and the title is the same as my column, Inside the Beltway, and it was kind of nice to sit down and rehash the past several administrations that I've covered. I'm still very happily a young person, so to speak, and now entering my 25th year here of covering various White Houses. And you know, there are times when there is more mudslinging and it is more polarized than other times. And I think right now, and it's no secret to anybody listening tonight, we're perhaps probably at about the most polarized I've seen it in this country, politically speaking, in the 25 years I've covered the various administrations.
Well, I share your concern. I think that certainly the war is a decisive factor, and people feel very, very strongly one way, or they feel very strongly the other way. And, of course, there's really no sort of halfway position in between the two of them, except maybe John Kerry can always come up with a halfway position on most of anything.
Well, he's the typical quintessential politician, I think, with regard to that. And you know, we've seen it. We've seen him change in mid-stride from one platform to another platform, one of the more recent ones being when on August 1st he appeared on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, and he asked him, well, where would you reduce the troop deployments in this world? And he said, well, I probably would remove some from North Korea. And then 2 weeks later, when President Bush came out and proposed that, John Kerry went on the offensive and said, how can we remove any troops from North Korea when they're facing us down from the nuclear standpoint? So, you know, it's an intriguing monster to watch on a daily basis, and I write five columns a week, and I'm never at a loss for fodder in this city.
Well, why don't you tell us some of those stories, because we've got an hour here, and we want to just know as much as we can, and hopefully, of course, people will be so intrigued they want to get a copy of book.
Well, you know, the people that are buying the book are telling me they're laughing out loud, and that's the great thing about the Inside the Beltway beat and now the Inside the Beltway book. I get to concentrate on the parts of Washington and the people in Washington that most reporters ignore because they're too busy covering the serious side. But there's a human side to every politician, and basically after they read the book, they'll find out that they're no different than anybody else in this country. They're dog walkers and cat lovers and den mothers and Boy Scout leaders. And it's just when they get in a pack, kind of like teenagers, that the shouting and all the raucous behavior begins. But that takes me to my favorite description.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment.
Sure.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is John McCaslin, and we're going to be talking about his new book, Inside the Beltway, and he writes an call him there from out of Washington, D.C. He's been there for 25 years, right there in the belly of the beast, talking about what's going on politically, but also talking about the human element of what's going on there. And his articles are syndicated in newspapers across America. About how many newspapers carry your articles?
Well, you know, I learn that every month when I get my measly little check, but... The news holes are shrinking in the newspaper industry, unfortunately. The newspaper readers are dying off with every generation. I am happy to report that more young people are beginning to read news items on the Internet, but we're all struggling within the newspaper industry to figure out which direction to go in, which makes my column fun because it's about 7 short anecdotes every day, and people like to read short items because there's so much information overload coming at you from TV, from radio, what have you, including the Internet. So that's kind of my angle. And then, obviously, I've got many clients on the Internet as well, which are through the syndicate. So I'm keeping busy.
Well, tell me a little bit about that, because I went up in your website today, and I saw that you had at least some of your articles posted there. Do people actually sort of pay to get onto the Internet and read them?
Well, that's another thing we're looking at. How can we start charging people? I'm happy to say that the Washington Times site, which is WashingtonTimes.com, where you can read the Inside the Beltway column every day, remains free. Some of our competitors charge you. You at least have to register to get in, and then to see some of the items, you have to start paying. We're finding that we can put banners and other advertising on the Internet and at least get a little income that way. But I think for the most part, most newspapers and what we publish are free. The Associated Press is free, and I think it should stay that way because... you're not paying for anything, obviously, other than the opportunity to read some great items.
I know, but you have to make a living, too, and I have a friend of mine who does programs very similar to mine, and his source of income is, you know, $6 a month people pay to listen to his programs, and I think it's a great deal, you know, and if it's got something worth saying, it's amazing how many hundreds and hundreds of people will actually pay something like that just because they want to know what you have to say, and from what I've seen, you've got a great deal of information and insight into what's really going on there.
Well, I promise to bring a smile to people's faces every day, and I do, and I think that's the great thing about the column. I write about some outrageous things that happen here, some very surprising things. You know, you can begin with some of the various anecdotes I have. My favorite description of Congress, I'm on Capitol Hill most every day, and that's a place where someone takes the floor to speak, says nothing, nobody listens, and then everybody disagrees.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest. Okay, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this afternoon is John McCaslin, and of course it's his Inside the Beltway column in the Washington Times, in the Washington Times and in other newspapers across the country. But of course his goal is not necessarily to give you all the news, but to give you a smile. And sometimes when things are really as serious as they are today, sometimes you need a smile. I always look forward to those things that come in over the Internet where you read them through and that last punchline, you just break out laughing. You need to have a laugh because if we take ourselves too seriously, why, we get pretty depressed. So tell us about some of the other things that you have there.
Well, I intercept memos all the time, whether they're serious memos from the State Department coming from Saudi Arabia in light of 9/11, or the humorous ones, the hilarious memos. I intercepted one that was sent by President Clinton's National Security County Council Executive Secretary to the State Department's Executive Secretary, obviously a little critical of this gentleman, and she wrote, quote, "Late submissions of reports to Congress may reflect unfavorably on the administration and the president personally, particularly when, as here, the late report is a report on why reports are late." And then you've got Haley Barbour. He's the former chairman of the Republican National Committee. He's been now elected governor of Mississippi. A lot of people don't realize he was one of the top census officials in this country. And he tells me the story in my book that one day a bunch of them were sitting around the office looking at some business census forms that had come back. And he never forgot one response that he got from a little mom-and-pop operation. And as they went down the questionnaire, they came to the question, number of employees broken down by sex. And they answered that question, none broken down by sex, but we do have two with a drinking problem. But there's many of these things every day. Tricks that are played on senators like Mark Hatfield, the former Oregon Republican, his favorite historical subject was Abraham Lincoln, and he's an avid collector of Lincoln memorabilia. Well, shortly before their boss was presented with the annual Silvio Conti Joy of Politics Award, Hatfield staff had experts at the National Archives here reproduce Lincoln's 1865 appointment of Ulysses S. Grant to Major General. And Hatfield had been told to expect a gift from the archives sometime that year, but exactly what and when he didn't know. Well, the co-chairman of the Conti dinner was former Louisiana Congressman Robert Livingston, who announced that he was privileged to present Hatfield with this special gift, which he said was a priceless Lincoln document, compliments of the National Archives. Well, as the congressman held up the document, a beaming Hatfield rose from his seat to claim the priceless piece of history. "No, Mark, stay in your seat," Livingston insisted. "I want to make a toast to you," at which time Livingston raised his full glass and accidentally spilled its entire contents onto the document. And as Livingston shouted, "What have I done?" a horrified Hatfield rushed forward almost in tears. And it was only after he picked up the soggy, dripping document that he was finally let in on the prank.
Well, of course, Grant was a great general, but he was certainly more than one drink. That's we can put it that way.
There you go. We've got the two employees at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration who were cautioned about racial insensitivity after labeling various recycling containers in their office, which they'd been told to do. One container they labeled white paper, the other they labeled colored paper. Or they were told that was insensitive. They were sent for sensitivity training, and since then the trash cans have been relabeled white paper and non-white paper. So you got to be very careful in Washington.
Well, I'll tell you, that is the most ridiculous sort of thing. It's almost afraid to say much of anything for fear that somebody will be offended.
Exactly. You don't know who you're offending here. There was the recent debate we had on what constitutes physical desecration of the flag stand. You remember that. And Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware, his small state boasts several popular beaches. Joe Biden likes to go to the beach. And he posed a question that for once stumped the entire Senate body. He said, "How about the woman who buys the revealing thong bikini that is made in a flag?" He said he saw one. He wondered if that was profaning the flag, and is she to be arrested? Well, there was complete silence for once in the Senate hall. I happened to be in there. And Biden solved the problem by offering an amendment that would make it, and I quote here, "unlawful to do the flag harm, no ifs, ands, or buts."
Oh, that's terrible. Well, you know, of course, these men are making such serious decisions, and I really believe that the whole idea of Will Rogers was that no man's life or property are safe when the legislature is in session. I wish that they'd be there maybe 2 months out of the year and spend the rest of their time back home having to live like the rest of us instead of passing all this legislation, because none of it's making us any freer and very little of it's making us any better.
Well, Stan, you know, that's a good point. And somebody said, wouldn't it be great to have one session of Congress where they only came in to get rid of this legislation that they passed before, some of these silly laws, some of these money-consuming things, and obviously not the serious ones, but just to come in and make a concerted effort in one session to see what you can trim, what fat you can trim from the U.S. government, and I can tell you, you'll save billions of dollars.
Well, I have a friend of mine who sat in the United States. In fact, he was a congressman for a while. He was named Bill Richardson, and he was one of the senior senators in Sacramento. He wrote a book one time called "You Don't Really Think We Read Those Bills, Do You?" And you know, the trouble is that a lot of our legislators never do read the bills. They depend on somebody else to tell them what's in it, and they vote yay or nay because they're too long. You need a very, very short bill. I think they ought to have a bill that you can't have a bill that's any more than 3 pages long. Then they wouldn't be able to sneak all sorts of bad things in there. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great idea, you know, and every 4 years we hear a president promise to us that they're going to simplify the tax form, Stan, and they never get around to doing it. But that's thousands of pages now, depending what kind of business you're in, and just for John Q. Public like you and me, it's voluminous enough and it's confusing enough, and we need to simplify that, and I think we do need to simplify some of these laws we're passing. It should be mandatory a certain amount of... In fact, they don't read them, and I just wrote about that gentleman in that great book that he wrote only recently, and that's one that will always be in the forefront when you cite this argument.
Okay, well, now, certainly we find this problem there. They have the legislation. What about the filibusters? This process by which a small minority can block the Senate and stop the will of the majority of our elected representatives from accomplishing things?
You know, it's a very good question, and I wrote in my book, Inside the Beltway, about Congressman Goodling, who recently retired from Pennsylvania. And he knew what the other side, he happens to be a Republican, he knew what the Democrats were going to do. He'd heard rumors that they were going to come in and they were going to filibuster, and this was while a bill was still in committee. And so what he did, and one of the tactics that the Democrats will do or the Republicans will do, as a bill is being debated in committee, they will get up and enough of them will leave the room that they can't take action because there's not the full quorum that you need there to vote. So he issued a law, at least for that day, that nobody can get up and leave the room without permission. And one congressman from California raised his hand and he said, well, what if we have to go to the restroom? And Goodling said, well, you can hold up one finger or two and I will excuse you. But other than that, nobody is to leave the room until this either passes or fails. So some congressmen want to crack down on this, but it's a tactic, as you say, that is used all the time, especially towards the latter part of a session, and that's where it gets very political.
And what worries me, of course, is that we are approaching that time when everybody wants to get out, for the election of their own, to make sure they get reelected. And sometimes it's those last few days, or maybe even the last day of the session, when they pass, you know, literally dozens of pieces of legislation with all sorts of pork attached onto them. That is detrimental. I mean, I think that so much of what they do is not good for America, but is the means of getting themselves reelected, because they're not dedicated to the right or the left. They're dedicated to staying in Washington, D.C. I don't really think a lot of them really care about what happens to this country in the future as we move from crisis into bankruptcy. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, that's the whole term limit debate. That's one angle of it. Are congressmen and senators allowed to serve too long here? We've got people like Bobby Byrd of West Virginia, who brings a lot of pork home to his state, a lot of bacon home to his state. And you know, it's a very poor state to begin with, and I know they should get some, but Bobby Byrd has outlasted 11 presidents on Capitol Hill. That's how long he's been there. He's been there, you know, well over 40 years. He's seen presidents come and go. And I think that, until we pass some laws, also, you know, you talk about how they're anxious to get out at the end of the session to run for reelection. Should we examine whether a congressman should stay in office for more than 2 years? Because, as Alan Simpson, the former senator from Wyoming, pointed out, you're constantly running for re-election. Constantly. Senators are allowed to stay in for 6 years. Should congressmen be in for more than 2 years? Because I'm telling you, the second they get to Washington, they already have to run for re-election.
And you are a lot closer to that than I am, but I think there ought to be term limits. And I know that the freshman class that came in 1994, I don't know, I've forgotten how many new congressmen there were, but that was the Republican sweep. And a lot of them promised they'd leave after 6 years. And then after 6 years, they got to liking it so well that they just forgot about their promise. There were a few of them who did go home and say, we said we'd do it, and we're going to hold to it. Tom Copeland was one of those. But I'll tell you what, there were an awful lot who didn't. Just didn't remember what they promised.
Yeah, Mark Sanford of South Carolina was one who not only promised he would serve for three terms, he came up, he did so. He even slept in his office. He didn't even rent a house. He wanted to prove to his constituents that he was going to be on Capitol Hill. He put some kind of a cot down on the floor and stayed in his office, and now he's gone home. And he has stayed in politics, I might point out. He has been elected governor of South Carolina, so they rewarded him for his term limit pledge and only serving what he said he would serve.
Well, what's the solution to Washington, D.C.? You're there. Well, we're not going to solve this till we get back from this, but I hope you'll think a little bit about what you can tell us afterwards. What can we do? We're out here. We sent our congressman back to Washington, D.C. He says he's going to limit the power of government, get a balanced budget, and then he does exactly the opposite. The average individual doesn't have any idea how their congressman votes, and now, thanks to the McCain-Feingold bill, it becomes illegal for anybody to circulate any record of how your congressman has voted within 60 days of the election, and most people don't care before 60 days of the election. What they've done is restricted freedom of speech here. One of the most frightening pieces of legislation put forward to stop soft money, and of course, there's more soft money now, this time, than ever before in all history, except now we can't talk about what's really going on. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinex is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess this afternoon is John Castlin, and of course he writes inside the Beltway. He's been doing it for, back there for 25 years covering what's going on in Washington, D.C. And I simply asked him before we went to the break, what can the average person do here? And then, of course, we want to get some more of the wonderful stories from his book. But, you know, I think that a lot of people out here all across America have almost a helpless feeling that we don't know what's going on in Washington, D.C. We don't know what our legislator is doing. He always says what we want to hear when we're home, but what's he really doing back there?
Well, you know, Stan, it's interesting, and I think you've mentioned that a lot of Americans don't know what's going on in Washington, and I think part of the blame there lies on Americans themselves. You know, we've learned in this Iraqi situation that not everybody around the world thinks highly of Americans as a whole. They don't like a lot of what's coming out of Hollywood, what it's doing to their own cultures. And obviously, Americans know we aren't the bullies that many in the world make us out to be, which is why I write that it's crucial, given the growing apparent hatred for America in some quarters, that with this continued war on terrorism, which is likely to last for decades, that it be accompanied by an unprecedented public relations campaign touting the freedom-loving principles that America stands for. But first, we as a country need to rediscover, if not learn for the first time, what being American is truly about. And that's why we need to pay attention with what's going on in Washington. Not until we know ourselves can we be introduced to the rest of the world. And a good place to start is right around the dinner table at home, because a majority of the young people in this country are growing up in homes whose parents don't vote. Their schools don't emphasize civics. They don't emphasize citizenship. They never talk about current events. And that's obviously what a lot of which comes out of Washington. And unfortunately, the patriotic fervor that was generated by the September 11th terrorist attacks failed to translate into increased civic participation by Americans. Already, we're ignoring again what's going on in Washington. So there's a lot that we can do just as individuals, and through our schools and around the dinner table, as I said, to stress that maybe we should start paying more attention to what's going on in Washington. Tell our little children about those that are leading us in these times of trouble. I think we do have more people paying attention to what's taking place here than we did before, but there's still a long way to go, Stan.
Well, my concern is that, of course, we're supposedly involved in a war to bring freedom to people in other countries, but freedom really has to do with limitation of government and having the government not regulate and control you. So it seems like we're bringing people freedom to people in other countries as we have increasing regulation and observation and monitoring here at home. It's almost as if we're exporting freedom and losing it here.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a very good point. A lot of people say, you know, have said over the years, as we give so much, monetarily speaking, to other nations, well, what about the poor in our own country? You know, why don't we take care of them? So that's why I think we do need to go in, as you pointed out, maybe have one of these sessions where we re-examine what we're doing, not only internationally, but domestically. You know, right now what we want to do is instill in Iraq, the nation of Iraq, what we have here. That's a nation with a proud heritage, abundant resources, obviously, skilled and educated people. They're fully capable of moving toward a democracy and living in freedom. But should it be what we have here? Well, we have to draw the line somewhere, and that means that, you know, once we try to secure, and hopefully we will secure that country, then we back out and let them go ahead and trek their own future. And we'll see what happens. But, boy, it's a terrible situation over there right now.
Well, what I don't understand, and maybe you can explain to me, why did we dissolve the army? Why did we dissolve the police force? Why did we create a state where there could be nothing but total chaos other than the American troops? And then when you try to reform the army, why, we've killed a couple of the generals, and I don't think many of them want to go to work for the Americans.
Well, you know, there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on, but I think that you can be sure that, which is why one question is often posed to President Bush, will he admit that he made some mistakes over there? Obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the administration totally misjudged what the reaction would be of the Iraqi people as a whole when we went in to liberate them from what was a barbaric regime of Saddam Hussein and his lunatic sons. No doubt about that. They persecuted their own people. But I think that we were caught off guard. There's too many factions over there, both religious and cultural. And now we're definitely, you know, doing as much as we can to just bring some order to that country.
Well, and in Russia, the man who was in charge where they had this recent confrontation resigned. He said, "I'm not fit to serve after what happened and the loss of 350 people. Why doesn't any American ever resign when he's been incompetent and led to a terrible tragedy?" Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment, but let's get back to the book. We don't want to get onto too many serious things. And if you have a question for our guest, give us a call here at Radio Liberty. Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a few weeks ago, why Kevin DeMeritt of Lear Financial contacted us and asked if he could sponsor some of our programs. Well, I looked into the background of the company. They have an excellent reputation, so I think it's a good time to think very seriously about investing in precious metals. Why? Because we have inflation, we have a progressively devalued dollar, and we've lost almost 30-40% of our value of our currency, and we know that people like Warren Buffett are investing overseas. They're not investing in American currencies. Why not give the people at Lear Financial a call at 1-888-302-7111, that's 1-888-302-7111, and ask for their free audio seminar. Again, the number 1-888-302-7111. I think this is an excellent time to consider protecting your assets.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today writes a column inside the Beltway. You can read it in the Washington Times and in other newspapers, but he's come out with a great new book by that title, talking about his experiences working there with the politicians, working there with the bureaucrats. And after 25 years, do you feel that we've got a lot of hope for America? Do you think we can get things straightened out?
I think we can if we all stick together and don't become too polarized, as we talked about earlier in the show. I think that's obviously, I love anything that fuels debate, and interest in this country. And I think what we do, what you do on the radio, what I do in the column every day, generates discussion and interest in the daily workings of our government and our democracy. So one always wants to be as optimistic as they can. Hopefully after this election is over, we can get down to some successes because we've been seeing a lot of failures of late, and you have to think of the men that are fighting over in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere around the world and all they're doing and all they're sacrificing and all the families and what they're sacrificing here. We just went over 1,000 casualties, fatalities in the war in Iraq, and those are families that are suffering so right now. So we have to try to bring some more positive news to this country for the economy and what have you, and at the same time keep the terrorists out because they impact so much of what we do.
Okay, fine. Well, now, are there any specific stories you'd like to tell us before we go to one of our callers here?
Yeah, we talk about some of the outrageous things that happen in Washington, and one of those that I'm sure you'll be interested in, Stan, had to do with Congressman Joe Nolenberg, a Michigan Republican, who told me the story from my book of a woman named Jean English, who, while reading through the mail of her recently departed brother, discovered a bill for his final hospital stay. Now, it should be pointed out that her brother, who was suffering from a terminal illness, died only a few days after being admitted. Well, incredibly, the bill for his four-day stay in the hospital came to $369,000. Now, the entire amount was forwarded to Medicare for payment. Shocked at the expense, this woman called the hospital for an explanation. And what she got was a 14-page itemized statement, which the greatest cost being a 7-hour stay in the emergency room that they said cost $348,000 worth of supplies. Well, after much hemming and hawing, said the congressman, the hospital admitted that it had made a mistake. Instead of $348,000, the actual charge should have been $61. That's right, $61, which is an overcharge of $347,920. Well, that's embarrassing enough, but it's not the end of the story. The errant bill had been sent to Medicare, and it was paid by Medicare. They paid the bill, the entire $348,000. Nobody there even questioned that 4 days in the hospital should not come to that amount.
And I think
so we need some watchdogs here.
But see, the thing is that when you're paying your own bill, you look at the bill. When somebody else is paying your bill, are you really concerned? I mean, I went in and had a total hip operation, cost $50,000, but Medicare picked up the whole bill. If I'd gone in and had it done, not on Medicare, I probably could have had it done for $10,000. But the whole system is set up for corruption, to breed corruption, and the only way the hospitals can survive, because the government pays less than the actual cost, is to cost transfer and put in these ridiculous bills with the hope that they're going to get something out of it. And every once in a while, they get lucky.
Yeah,
but
true.
But it's wrong. It is wrong, you know. And what we're doing, we're doing the same things with the doctors. We're actually encouraging people not to be honest and straightforward and not to bill according to what a service is worth, because you know the government or the insurance companies got to cut back on it. If you're honest, you're a fool.
Yes, that's true. And look what's happening to the doctors today. So many of them are backing out of their chosen profession because they just can't pay the insurance.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, and I was an orthopedic surgeon for 40 years, wasn't it?
And I am aware of that, and a very successful one who had a major impact in California. I've read about you for years.
Have you really?
Yes, sir.
I had no idea. Well, anyway, let's go to Nathan, who's calling in. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Nathan, how are you?
Great program. There's one issue, though, I do have, and it's a polite disagreement. You gentlemen were talking about gridlock. I'm sorry, you were talking about a filibustering earlier?
Uh-huh.
I'd like to try and defend it, if I could. You watched Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, right? It's very romantic, it's very corny, but I think it had a good message about the majority isn't always right. And when the Founding Fathers set up the system, they did set up a republic, really, not strictly a democracy, but a system where there was checks and balances, and I think it's important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And
all right, you're a vote for filibuster then.
I vote for filibustering, and I'm going to filibuster right now.
All right, fine. Thanks so much. Okay, that was Nathan, and Nathan thinks the filibuster is a good thing. How do you feel? Do you feel that there is a place for the filibuster?
Well, Nathan's got a good point. I think our founding fathers, that's the reason we have the Senate, the reason we have the House, the reason we have the Supreme Court, and the reason we have the executive branch, so we could not have somebody making all the decisions from one quarter. And sometimes that does not work, and I think that when people might say they're for a filibuster today, it's one of these unusual situations which we have right now, where we not only have a Republican White House, we have a Republican majority in both houses of Congress, and that does not happen very often in one's lifetime. But right now, you can be sure that the Democrats, for several years now, have never felt such the minority that they are right now, and it's very difficult to get anything done from your side when you're sitting in the minority like this, which is why they find it so crucial to get in the White House and retake the Senate, at least.
All right, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So give us a call if you have a question. If you'd like to talk to somebody who's inside the Beltway, and of course that's the title of his brand new book, just came out. And of course your thoughts about what we're talking about, what's happening in Washington, D.C., because whether we like it or not, why, what happens in Washington, D.C. involves every single one of our lives. And if we're not involved, who will be? And if not now, when? Of course, that was a wonderful line of Ronald Reagan's, but it was one of my favorite lines that he had. Did you know Ronald Reagan pretty well?
I did. You know, as a young man, I left the West. I worked in radio, as you do now, in your second part of your profession. And I loved working in radio, and I got to meet Ronald Reagan when I worked in Montana, in western Montana. I was covering UPI broadcasts then, right out of college, and by getting my resume together, meeting him and George Bush, who was vice president. James Watt used to come out west all the time in his controversial days as interior secretary, and I made this very undeserved leap right into the Reagan White House as a member of the White House press corps, and it was a great opportunity for a young man. I was only 27, 28, 29 years old when I covered the Reagan White House, and I covered his 1984 reelection. And then, you know, it was so incredible for me to have, and I had no idea that it was taking place, but I interviewed Ronald Reagan in Century City in his retirement back in the early 90s, and just a few days after that interview, he announced that he had Alzheimer's and would no longer be doing any public appearances or interviews. So, as it turned out, as history had it, I had the last interview with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I bet that was a great experience. He certainly played a very important part in the history of our country.
He definitely did.
All right. Well, of course, now, are you still allowed to go to the White House press conferences? Are you one of those people who's sitting in the audience when they give them, or is that a very selected group of people?
It's a selected group that is there on a daily basis. I can go every day. I'm no longer one of the 60 or 70 that are there full-time that are in the White House rotation where they do the pool reports, where they travel with the president on a daily basis, especially during a reelection campaign. But there's a, believe it or not, Stan, over 1,000 people that have White House credentials. And every one of those people, if they wanted to, could go there on a daily basis. But of course they don't. People like me that are columnists have credentials. Bob Novak is another one. Somebody like Tim Russert of NBC would have White House credentials. So people have them, but it's only a select group that are really there every day and that do have a seat reserved for themselves every day in the White House briefing room. But if I wanted to go over and stand against a wall, I could do that.
All right, fine. Do you do that very often? You spend most of your time just talking to people and getting wonderful stories to tell?
Well, I try to talk to people and get wonderful stories, but there's a big difference, as I mentioned before, between the Clinton White House and the Bush White House. So little news comes out of the Clinton White out of the Bush White House because George Bush basically allows few leaks to get out, so people are afraid to talk. But during the Clinton White House, you were over there all the time, and even though you were writing about scandals that were very unflattering of the president, more people would talk to you over there than they do now. So I find myself over there less and less these days because there's just not any news that's coming out of there. I prefer to get it off of Pennsylvania Avenue as they walk back and forth between Capitol Hill and the White House.
Well, you know, I read all the time about this unidentified government official or this leak or that leak, and I have a feeling that all of this or most of this is intentional. In other words, they are intentionally putting information out to try to influence it in the form of leaks. Is that, am I a little paranoid, or is that really the way that it is? In other words, are they do they have the official party line and then the leak party line, and they're hoping to get us to go along with a lot of these leaks, which may or may not be true?
Well, it's a great question, Stan, and you will often see stories floated out there, ideas floated out there, because the administration wants to find out what the reaction of the public will be, or perhaps the reaction of the other party. So they will go to a very highly influential organ, say the New York Times, even though the New York Times editorially might not agree with President Bush a lot, they will go to the New York Times and leak a story to them just to see what the reaction will be on the part of the American public. Then I've heard people go so far as to say that the White House will then deny what they leaked out because they realized it wasn't that good of an idea. So you've got to be very careful with the leaks that you do get. You need to corroborate as much as you can. You need to realize if you're ever being used. And if somebody calls me up and said, Joe Smith used you today, couldn't you tell? I'll say, well, go ahead and you can use me right back and I'll put your idea or your reaction in tomorrow.
Okay, well, you know, I think you have to be very, very perceptive in your business because, you know, there's nothing like getting a real scoop on everybody else. But, you know, if it's not true, why, you're in real trouble.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you talk about the unnamed sources and the administration officials that tell you something. George Bush got so upset that leaks were coming out of his White House about a year ago that he forbid any more of his White House staff to leak a story, with the source being an unnamed White House official. He said, no more. If you're not going to give your name, you cannot say anything. And the funny thing was about that unnamed White House official rule, an unnamed White House official told me that, so I put both of them in.
Okay. Well, you know, I think it must be exciting, though, because actually you're a witness to history. You're seeing the things unfolding, and although we've gone through many, many things and since I've been observing things, I think that in many respects we're probably at one of the most dangerous times in the history of this nation. Certainly the unstable situation in the Middle East, Iran's increasingly looking like they're going to become a nuclear power, and they're even rattling their nuclear sabers. And of course, now we see Putin actually coming forward and saying, well, I think that the Americans were financing these Chechen terrorists. And of course, we know that Russia is just really up in arms. I think that certainly with what's going on with North Korea, with what's going on with China, who are really not our friends, we're really in a very unstable position. But I don't think the average American has any idea of the implications of what's happening.
Well, you know, I feel sorry for our children and grandchildren because we cannot communicate with other governments and countries the way we have as our fathers did and as we're even doing today. George Bush is learning this. He's the first one to learn it because the model of the new 21st century political figure that we have to deal with is this type of person. He's like Osama bin Laden. He holds no public office. He communicates his decrees over the internet. He instructs his followers by cell or satellite phone, and he lives in a small room in an underground bunker, and yet he commands more influence and exerts more military muscle than some governments. And these are the people we have to deal with. They're not even elected officials.
Well, I think that they're very, very difficult times as far as everybody is concerned. I think what we need is real leaders in Washington, D.C., who understand what to do and won't necessarily rush in brashly and perhaps create even more of a problem. I mean, what happened there with the crisis situation in Russia is an example of what happens when you send in with the troops and the guns blazing and then you get something happens you never wanted to have happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very tragic week in Russia, and boy, they're getting a very, very rude awakening and taste of terrorism. I think they've had five incidents, a couple subway incidents, and then, you know, the last one being this terrible tragedy at the school. And, you know, they look back at how the hostage situation was when they took over the entire opera there in Moscow a couple years ago, and how they need to react to this. But I know that the U.S. has sent teams over there to help them, you know, cope with this and to learn in the future how to deal with these hostage situations. And I know that Putin has already gotten together with Israel to find out how they've handled it. So there's some silver linings in these terrible tragedies, I hope. And as you say, you know, in the future, perhaps we can handle them differently.
All right, fine. Well, now, where can people get your book?
Well, probably in California at any bookstore, but the easiest and cheapest way would be off Amazon.com, which chops about $9 off the cover price, and they deliver it to your front door for a savings of about $6 a book once you pay for the postage. So that's how a lot of my friends are getting it that live outside the Beltway. And it's called Inside the Beltway, Offbeat Stories, Scoops, and Shenanigans from Around the Nation's Capital. And if you want a light read and you want a smile, I've gotten some great reviews from people like Sam Donaldson here with ABC and Rush Limbaugh and even George Stephanopoulos. So they're all laughing at the book from all sides of the political aisle.
Even George Stephanopoulos, who's, of course, an ardent Democrat, and I have a feeling that you're more of a conservative than a liberal, although you may very well be like I am, not too well identified with either side, but you were with National Review for a time, weren't you?
Well, actually, no. I worked in radio for UPI and then at the Times, and then I've been writing this column now for a dozen years, so... No, I try to stay purely in the middle as we were taught in Journalism 101, and the great thing about this book is that both sides are coming out saying that it appeals to both of them. And in fact, that's what Sam Donaldson wrote. He said, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, you'll love the book. Those are his words, not mine, but I don't mind repeating them.
All right, fine. Well, the best of luck to you, and I hope the book gets right there at the top of the New York Times bestseller list.
Sam, thanks very much, and it was a pleasure to be with you. Hope to come back again.
Okay. Love to have you anytime. Just give me a call. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was, of course, John McCaslin, and I hope you enjoyed our opportunity to just chat with him about his new book. And, of course, I was somewhat at a disadvantage because they were supposed to send me one, and they hadn't. But by the miracle of the Internet, I was able to get up on the Internet and find out about the book and find out about John and find out about some of the other things he's written. And you'll find, if you go to his website and you simply type in Google, and then you copy in John McCaslin, and of course, why you go to his website, and then you begin pulling down the articles off the Washington Times. The Internet has given us a whole new opportunity to get information. In fact, I've been at this game for 42 years now, and I will tell you I'm more optimistic than I've ever been before. More and more Americans are getting informed. They're listening to talk radio. They're listening to shortwave. They're going onto the Internet, and when they can find a site where they can depend upon the information, why they can get the truth. Now, we've never had this ability before, so don't despair. This is the time to get involved, because if we don't get involved now, when will we get involved? Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Conservative Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four tapes set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we were just talking about my tape on the Council on Foreign Relations, but that's actually included in our four tape set on secret societies, and so we hope many of you out there will want to get our four tape set. First of all, in The Secret Government, you'll actually hear an interview with Professor Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, and it's not an interview that I did, but I purchased the right to use this from Professor Quigley's wife, and it goes into the background of this little group of people who started back in 1891 at a meeting to figure out how they were going to take over the world and to carry out Cecil Rhodes' dream of uniting the world behind the English Empire, expanding the empire, and bringing all these other developed countries, and of course he was really talking about the poor people throughout the world, bringing them under the control of the British aristocracy, because his ideas were some men are born to be ruled and others should do the ruling, and he felt that he was part of this ruling class. He believed in the ideas of John Ruskin, who had taught at Oxford, and of course Oxford had believed what Plato had said, you needed a ruling class. You go back and read Plato's Republic, you'll find the whole idea is a ruling class, a massive military, and then of course everybody else enslaved, doing away with the family, the children belong to the state, and that's exactly what Rhodes wanted, and that's what his disciples want today. Now, not everybody in the Council on Foreign Relations understands what the Council is all about, but the leaders do. They're part of an elite group who intend to rule the world. And, of course, they're using America's military and financial power to bring this about. If you'd like to hear that four-tape set, it's in the secret government, it's in the secret society's four-tape set, or you can get the secret government four-tape set. They're all available in the secret government special. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we live in very, very difficult times. I really fear for those young men over in the Middle East, because I've read the plan. I've heard William Crystal on a Ted Koppel show, and William Crystal is the head of the Project for the New American Century, to which Donald Rumsfeld and certainly Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and John Bolton and Elliot Abrahams and so many of the people in the government, there were only 25 of them, they took over our government, and most people don't know that, but you go to their website, newamericancentury.org, and look it up there and look at what they were talking about in 1997 and 1998 and 2000 and the report on rebuilding America, telling how we were going to have to leave our troops in the Middle East indefinitely and have troops stationed throughout the world and how we really needed an incident to accomplish our goal. A catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. It's all there. You can actually get the material off their website from my syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. You really need to see the video. You need to get the syllabus and get the documentation. Now, you can go to their website. You'll spend a lot of time going through the material. It's all there. But we have it all summarized, exactly the pages you can go to on their website to find what it's about. But the question is, why did they put it up there? Why would they tell people exactly who they are and what they're going to do? Well, you see, if you go into the background of what happened on September 11th, and you read this wonderful book by Jim Mars, it's called Inside Job, and there's all the evidence there that will convince you it was the Pakistanis who were behind it. And then there's another whole flock of evidence that will convince you it was really the Saudis. The Saudis were behind this. And 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia, and the Saudis were financing this. And then there's a lot of information there that's suggesting the Mossad was really behind what happened. And then there's the information that suggests the Project for the New American Century and this small clique that really controls our government was behind that. And the question is, is this all real, or is this all cover stories to conceal the real issue, who was really behind what happened that day? And I think the Russian economist was closer to the truth than anybody, but you'll have to get the book. It's called Inside Job by Jim Mars, and we're going to be getting that. We're going to be carrying the book. And there was a Russian economist who, weeks before the 9/11 attack, told the Russians to get their money out of American investments and out of the Russian American stock market, because a major event was going to happen. And after the event, she said, don't for one minute believe this was 19 hijackers, 15 of them are from Soviet Union. And then she explained what she believed. And I think she's closer to the truth, although nobody has the complete truth. We may never know in our lifetime, but I will tell you that when we have the 911 committee investigating what happened, so we can let everybody know, and then they seal all of the evidence, all of their testimony, everything will be sealed for 30 years other than what they put out in the censored report. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they sealed it for 30 years? And I'd like to suggest to you, they're frightened to death for the American people ever to learn the truth about what happened on 911, about what happened at Oklahoma City, about what happened when TWA 800 went down, about what happened when President Kennedy was assassinated, even the material information that about what happened 60 years ago at Pearl Harbor is still classified and top secret. Why? Because we can't let the American people know the truth. I thought that we had a free, open society. Well, I used to think that, too. That's why you need my video, Iraq, the Untold Story. You need my syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We hope that many of you are going to seriously consider coming to the conference we're going to be putting on. It's going to be put on the 6th of November here in the Monterey Bay area, and we hope that many of you will make arrangements to come. It's all-day seminar. The lunch is going to be served. We're bringing in speakers from the outside, and so we hope that you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And really a sign up for, so we'll know how many people are going to be here. Getting a good response so far. Until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.